begin tonight, next Wednesday, we'll have one extra class period. And if what we're going to do in that last class period is if there were any questions that you had in regards to the class this quarter or even the meeting this past weekend, to either email those or write those down and get them to me. Or if there's some sort of topic that we weren't able to address, feel free to send that over, and we'll see if we can have kind of a hodgepodge class at the end of this and cover those subjects. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about the effects of media. And again, this is in the...
Did you want this off? Did you want it off?
No, I didn't know it was off. Thank you. As we think about our society today, we do live in an amazing time. You know, we have had so many advancements in the areas of technology that we live in this world and relate to this world in ways that are somewhat unique. And so tonight we're going to talk about some of the dangers that we should be concerned about and deal with as we think about ourselves and the impact that technology may have on our children. And so as we begin the discussion tonight, I'd like to actually start with question number 6. You know, just because I think that would actually be a better way to start our class tonight. When it comes to what is technology, simply put? How would you describe technology? Yeah.
Advancement that makes life easier.
Yeah. Basically, that's it, right?
Shovels used to be technology back before they had shovels.
Wait, what was that?
I said shovels used to be technology before
yeah.
they had shovels.
Yeah.
So
it's really anything that you might that people might use some sort of scientific method to create and sort of facilitate living life on this planet, right? You know, when we think about the curse of sin, you know, the curse of sin brought thorns. And really technology are tools that help us live more fruitfully. They help us enjoy the creation, and they help us provide safety in this creation. Now, so that's what technology is. The first question, is technology good or evil?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you mean by yes?
Both.
Neither.
Okay. So why would you say neither?
Because I think Harper was about to start it. It can be used for both.
Yeah.
Right? And so technology is used to help someone beat cancer. That's not evil. But technology is used to hack into someone's system, steal their identity, steal money. That's evil. It all depends on who's using it and what it's being used for.
Yeah. And it's interesting that sometimes the very same technology can be used in dramatically different moral ways. And so when it comes to technology, it's neutral. It's not evil. It's not good. But the way that we use it can be good and can be evil. And Ben already pointed this out, but you know, when we think of technology, we might immediately think of our gadgets. But technology is much more broader than just gadgets. You know, just as far as like electronics and those sort of things, phones and the internet. You know, some things that again we might normally think about too. And technology can be anything that uses testing and you know, again, the scientific knowledge to help practically help our lives practically in some way. Turn to Genesis chapter 11. With technology, though, comes danger. You know, and I think we see that from the beginning of creation. Just as tools can be used to do fruitful things and honor God and exercise our dominion over the earth, as God, I believe, intended for us to do, sometimes technology makes it easier for evil to grow. And we have an example of that in Genesis chapter 11. What is taking place in Genesis chapter 11? What famous biblical story? Yeah, and what specifically at Babel? A tower, right? And I want you to notice verses 3 and 4 of... Oh, I forgot the purpose of the class. The purpose of this class is to acknowledge some challenges that media present to our spiritual and family life. But now, Genesis chapter 11, verses 3 and 4. Go ahead and, Robert, if you could read that for us.
They said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they used bricks for stone, and they used tar for mortar. They said, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into the heavens. And let us make for ourselves a name. Otherwise, we will be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth."
All right. And so here in Genesis chapter 11, what we find is really a use of technology, right? We are making advancements. We are figuring out ways to build things that previously weren't being built. And so what is their goal in taking this newfound technology of making these types of bricks and using tar and so forth to stick them together? What goal do they state in verse 4 that they have with their newfound technologies?
Build a tower to reach the heavens.
Yeah, so build a tower. And what will they accomplish with that?
Glorify themselves.
Yeah, they will make a name for themselves. And there's something else they're trying to
remain together.
Yeah, so we won't have to be scattered abroad. Now, why was that a bad thing? What's such a big deal about not being scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth?
It's contrary to what God's instructions.
Yeah, what were God's instructions?
Build you.
Inhabit the earth, be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
And basically, go out and conquer and rule over the earth.
Yeah. Now, tell me if you see this, you know, as you read what takes place at Babel, as you see them no longer using their technology merely to exercise an appropriate dominion over the earth as God designed for them to do, now they're trying to really exercise their dominion over the will of God. We don't need to trust in God. We can make a name for ourselves. We don't need to obey the mandate that was given at creation and then given again in the days of Noah to go fill the earth. And you can think about this idea of building this tremendous tower. Perhaps some have thought that maybe this is their way to even build such a structure that would even exceed some sort of flood that God might send. You know, you really see the spirit of placing their pride and their trust in their technology and to use that to sort of circumvent their need for God. We don't need Him anymore. This is what we have built. Is technology still used that way by some? Yeah, absolutely. Think about another example in the Bible. Psalm 20, verse 7. Psalm 20, verse 7. This is a psalm of David. And David, again, we can talk about his flaws, but David also understood very well why a battle would be won. And, you can think back in the days of Goliath, the battle belongs to the Lord. He will give me victory. And in Psalm 20, verse 7, David again is reflecting about really the difference between the children of Israel and the Philistines, and or the nations around them. And so Psalm 20, verse 7 says, "Some boast in chariots and some in horses, but we will boast in the name of the Lord our God." And so, you think about the wheel, You know, in the chariot, and you know, armies that had lots of chariots were going to be formidable opponents. And you know, they were products of technology. They were tools. And again, you can think about the wheel. There were some good, peaceful uses of the wheel, but there were also this way in which they could have this sort of power that could not be reckoned with. You know, we have chariots. And, you know, that would strike fear in their enemies, you know, if they had more chariots. And so here's a psalm actually saying, well, this is what some nations boast in, but we boast in the name of the Lord. But sadly, that wasn't always the case for Israel. Turn to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2, verses 7 and 8. You know, you fast forward a couple hundred years, and you know what you find in Israel is they're no longer boasting in the Lord. Instead, they're boasting in their own power and in their own chariots, and among other things. We read, their land has also been filled with silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land has also been filled with horses, and there is no end to their chariots. Their land has also been filled with idols. They worship the work of their hands, that which their fingers have made. And so as they're lamenting the spiritual well-being of Israel, you got idolatry, you have trust in their personal power and their tools more than God. Like, you know, who needs God when you've got wealth and when you've got horses and when you've got chariots? And this, again, is a trapping that technology can bring to man. I mean, who needs God when all of your needs are already answered? And as you think about the world we live in, today, you know, in America and really in a lot, many parts of the world, but especially in our culture, most people don't really have to worry much about their next meal. Now, obviously, there are some in that position, but generally, you know, we have stores everywhere, and even if there is someone worried about food, it's not really because there's a lack of resources in our country. We have resources; they abound. Right? There is plenty. You think about living in a world where one dry season, you know, can have a tremendous impact on such a simple thing as having enough food to feed your children. You know, we don't have it in that same way. You know, there are diseases that used to be serious. And if one caught these diseases, you know, this disease, their life was threatened. But now there are many of those types of sicknesses that we've largely cured, and they don't affect us anymore. And so, again, those are good advancements. But in all of these advancements, you know, there comes a tendency to no longer feel the need to trust in God as someone who has those strong felt needs. When you have a question, you know, that needs answered about life, you know, who do you go to? You know? We go to God, right? But when you have the powerful search engine of Google, you know, who needs to look deeper into things? The answers are already there. And so I think you can see the same struggle that was shown in Babel, and the same struggle that was shown in Israel as it relates to technology. And it's a struggle that we have to be aware of ourselves. Any comments or questions on that subject? Mark?
Consider Solomon through Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. He shows himself about many of his experiments, trying to find wisdom, how to improve his life, what to enjoy, what to have. And he comes down to the last chapter. All these things, the best things to do is to fear God. Mm-hmm. He explored the depth and this nobody knows, the wealth nobody can speak of. Mm-hmm. He has concluded in this is fear God. Mm-hmm.
And it's the same today, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's go to question number one in the workbook now. That was question six. Question one, in your own observation, how has technology changed the way people interact with each other? And this can be either positive or negative. How has technology changed the way that people interact with each other? Stuart?
Made communication faster.
Communication is much faster.
Whether that's good or bad,
yeah,
it needs to be seen.
Yeah. Robert?
It has destroyed the art of conversation.
Okay.
People no longer talk, they text.
Yeah. Texting's a lot easier, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, you don't see.
Are there people now who have a difficult time in carrying on conversations because of maybe they're just more comfortable, again, texting or behind a device?
I was talking to Kathy this evening. I said, people's language is so bad, the words they choose, the cursing and such as that, and the way they speak. In reality, they would never say that to your face.
Mm-hmm.
But they can hide behind a curtain and call you any name in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Your idea is not worth even, why are you even alive? But it's like Robert says, they don't have the ability to converse face to face, hide behind the curtain.
So yeah, you can see that sometimes. You know, I know that whenever I have to talk to some sort of agent who's provided bad service, I want to do it on a keyboard, and I want to have a recording, because if I'm talking to them, I'm going to get rolled over, you know. But there's almost a little bit of courage, you know, when I'm talking to the representative on a keyboard. But, Carl?
It was amazing, you know. I was just recently on the other side of the world,
mm-hmm.
and I could video call with my wife.
That had to cost thousands of dollars, right?
And it cost. I mean, it is on the over the internet, so it's on Wi-Fi, and so it cost almost nothing.
Yeah,
it was amazing, you know, when I was a kid that you could call Transatlantic, and you can make long distance calls. There wasn't more than $5 a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you did that, and now, yeah, it's basically free.
You look at each other. You know, when I was in China, I said good night or good morning to my wife and children many of the nights there. You know, and it was always the opposite. Of course, it was my good night for their good morning. But there were only a handful of days where we weren't able to make that happen. But it's amazing. That's great. You know, I was talking to my dad a little bit this afternoon. Actually, I was texting him. I remember in Flint, Michigan, in the 80s, we had a modem, a dial-up modem and a very early dial-up modem. And we were, Dad said it was England. I thought it was another country. But Dad actually sent a sentence to England and got a response. I mean, it was someone he knew, you know. But I think it took hours, you know, for like this very simple exchange, you know. And you know, that was in the late 80s. And I think probably if you were on the other end of that, you might have, and you didn't recognize the potential of what they could do, you might have thought, well, this is never going to work, you know. But you know, we weren't even disappointed. You know, my dad was like, they just sent that a few hours ago, and we're already reading it. You know, and we're like, wow. You know, but now we're looking at each other, and again, it doesn't really cost anything. That's pretty amazing. We've come a long way in that area. And when it comes to these sorts of devices, you know, and this sort of communication, the idea behind it is it helps us connect with people we would otherwise not be able to connect with. And again, that's neat. It's really cool. But as Robert already pointed out, it often can have a negative effect on our face-to-face interactions. And I think the word that would describe how media often affects our face-to-face interactions is it makes us very distracted. We're distracted. And maybe the reason is because at our fingertips is the opportunity to interact with nearly infinite sources. And because of that, it's almost like our head is somewhere else. You know, we're here, but our mind is in another world. You know, because, you know, right now, I could look at that score, right? Or, you know, and I just wonder, just take a second. You know, oh, my pocket just buzzed. I wonder who it is. You know, and it's interesting, you know, I've noticed before, you know, I could be in a conversation with someone at lunch and have you know, my phone set out and with the intention of not even looking at it. And once I hear it, it's got my attention. And maybe I have enough willpower not to actually look and see who it is. But in that moment, my attention was taken away from the person I was actually talking to a little vibrate. And it's like, it's kind of interesting how that happens, you know. You know, I can check news stories, you know, countless sources, all immediately. Have any of you seen that new Hewlett-Packard commercial about what is real? That's kind of a funny commercial. The commercial basically shows all of these people on their devices, and they're asking this question, is this how we eat? You know, it shows someone taking a picture of their food. Is this how we laugh? Is this how happy we are? You know, and it goes through all of these things. And at the end, it has a picture of a little girl staring blindly into her phone right next to her face. And it has kind of this... This question, have we lost touch with what's real? Of course, what's funny to me is the commercial is about printing things out, right? We use a Hewlett-Packard printer so you could actually hold something, you know. So I'm not sure, like, how much more real that gets. But the point is a good one. The point is a good one. How about the questions on that? Carl?
Same time, it's, you know, we have to adjust and adapt a little bit. I think you've used Meetup to do the study here, and have met some people that you otherwise wouldn't have had opportunity to meet and study with.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, again, I want to be clear, it's not evil. It's not wrong. There are lots of good uses for it. But there are some things we need to be aware of and concerned about as to how they can affect our thinking. Well, let's go to the next question. And, you know, really the point of this question is meant to be about meditation. But the question is, in the morning, do I first say a prayer, look at my Bible, or look at my phone? How might technology impact our ability to research? And again, my point in this question is to just note how much of a hold technology can have on us and the areas where it might become a competition to our ability to meditate and think about greater, higher things. Workers within the app developing world, like Facebook, openly admit that they designed their apps to take advantage of addictive cycles created through dopamine releases. I have a quote up here from an article. You should look it up. It's an interesting read. It's called "Dopamine, Smartphones, and You: A Battle for Your Time." Would someone like to explain dopamine? What is dopamine?
It's your pleasure. What you receive when something feels good, so you repeat that action. Like cocaine releases dopamine, or sugar releases dopamine.
Yes, okay.
And excitement releases dopamine.
Yeah.
It's a reward center.
All right, the reward center of the brain, right? So again, app developers work really hard to create cycles that activate that portion of the brain. And so in this is a guy who was a former vice president of user growth at Facebook. He says, "I feel tremendous guilt," admitted Chamath, I can't say his last name, former vice president of user growth at Facebook, to an audience of Stanford students. He was responding to a question about his involvement in exploiting consumer behavior. "The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works." That's his own observation. You know, again, they're creating almost a drug-like dependency that connects people to their apps and to their phones and to, again, the social media world. Instagram actually has, will occasionally withhold likes from, like, a picture you post. And what they do is, you know, what people do is they post a picture, they wait for likes, and Instagram will sometimes, in its algorithm, withhold the initial likes to actually create a little bit of anticipation. And then when they get a certain number, all of a sudden they'll come pouring in to sort of increase the sort of pain reward that is felt. And it's like, and they're doing that on purpose. You know, they're doing that on purpose to form this dependency on their platform. You know, so you know, that's how these things can affect our minds. Now, as we think about this question, read Psalm 119, 147 and 148, and think about David. And think about what it was like for him to either wake up early in the morning or to be awoken or still awake at the night watches. Psalm 119, and we'll call on Michael, if you could read 147 and 148.
"I rise before dawn and cry for help, and wait for your words. My eyes anticipate the night watches, that I may meditate on your word."
All right, so what was the first thing on David's mind when he woke up? And what did he think about at the night watches?
His word.
Word. You know, and you have the word meditate. We're going to come back to that word in just a minute. Meditate. Psalm 1, 1 through 3. Psalm 1, 1 through 3. Stuart, if you could read that.
Psalm chapter 1, verses 1 to 3. "How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. And in whatever he does, he prospers."
All right, so What is the blessed man or the righteous man? Where does he find fulfillment? Where does he find sustenance? Where does he find strength? What does he turn to? He turns to the law of the Lord. In his law, he meditates day and night. Another passage, Psalm 46:10. "Cease striving and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth." What's maybe the more famous way that this verse is rendered at the beginning?
Be still.
Be still. Right? Be still and know that I am God. And so there's this, you know, silence, this calmness, this serenity that can be found when one steps back, removes distractions, and meditates upon God. Now, what is meditation? How would you describe meditation?
Focused thought.
Focused thought. Can you meditate on Google? How come?
Too many distractions.
Yeah, too many distractions. Well, what if it's all on one Google search? What's the difference about that? You know, what makes that different than meditating on an idea going googling something and then reading every entry. What's different on that and true meditation? Is there a difference?
Resting in something. Okay. Resting, reflecting, kind of talking spiritually back and forth. You can't do that to Google. You're looking at something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is internal.
Okay.
Google is your external.
Okay. Christy?
Also, you're going to have certain types of sacred. Like,
okay. Okay, no, it's not focused.
But I would say the stimuli that when you're, it's constantly bombarding, it is hard to read an article where things are, and focus on something, which I like to do. That's and inclined to print it out so you don't have all the distractions. But as Chris was just saying, it's just constantly, it's made that way to keep you, to stay there. And not have a task completed and move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to stay on for hours at a time.
Yeah. And you have a never-ending scrolling, a never-ending, and what ends up happening is instead of digging deep into what it is that you're trying to meditate, you learn to just sort of skim across the surface. The more overwhelmed with information we are, the less we are actually able to know and to process. And when you meditate, you're digging deep, and that takes a different type of effort, a different type of focus than you can possibly get through that sort of medium. Now, it's being, you know, and then when you think about what's actually out there, there are more things that will likely, and Christy hit on this with the different links, but when you get online, it's going to stop your ability to meditate, because not only are you going to have the temptation to, you know, just sort of skim the surface, but you're going to have all sorts of distractions that will also take you away from the subject or the topic that you need to meditate on. I mean, again, online, we are inundated with gossip, irreverent and wicked behavior, and moral decisions that people are making everywhere. And again, we have an obsession in learning more about that. What is that about? You know, what did they actually do? Can you believe this guy? Can you believe this person? Can you believe what they did? And again, here we are, we're skimming the surface and not getting anywhere. Now, that sort of obsession isn't new. I was looking actually at an old picture today, and the picture was from 1940, and there was a poster on the wall, and this poster actually said, "The love life of Hitler revealed by his maid." And that picture was taken at a Montgomery, Alabama bus stop. You know, and you think, like, what sort of relevance would that picture have in Montgomery, Alabama? Well, it's the same sort of obsession that we see today. The difference today is that we, with no effort, can have that sort of filth poured into our minds with no filter. And again, I fear we are losing our ability to meditate deeply. And technology plays a part in that. Comments or questions?
It takes longer to produce down to a, at least this one, using meditation. If I'm studying, some of the commentaries are very difficult to read. Linsky goes from Latin to German. And so I'm going back and forth to translating different sayings. And you're going back and forth saying, "Here's nice dressed people brownies."
Mm-hmm.
What? I'm already having a hard time, this brain is struggling.
and certainly brownies or anything else thrown in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, then it starts the process all over again after I read the recipe. Or, you know, blueberry would be good with that. And it oftentimes it's really sidetracks you. Doesn't take much to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, it's a process.
Okay.
It's really good tools.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good tools. But it can derail you a heartbeat.
And sometimes when it comes to thinking, the less is more. Philosophy is very true. We might think we know more because we have access to more information, but that doesn't necessarily reflect our intelligence and the depths of the knowledge that we should be seeking to have in our understanding of the Word of God. Well, let's go to number three. How can social media increase peer pressure and impact the behavior of or character of our children? And, of course, we have 1 Corinthians 15:33, a very familiar verse to us. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. How does social media increase peer pressure? Michael?
It increases your peers.
Okay.
Just by sheer number.
Uh-huh.
You go through and you have so many friends online, way more than you would actually interact with.
Yeah. Okay.
Online. So just by sheer number, it increases the volume of peer pressure just through the sheer number of peers that you have now.
Okay, that's right. Stuart?
Generally speaking, it adds to the material mindset, the materialistic mindset that we talked about. You see your friends buying new things, going on fancy vacations, like, oh man, I wish I could be there, right? Wish I could do that too, wish I could have that car, et cetera, et cetera. And it's more on materialistic focus,
okay,
instead of spiritual focus,
mm-hmm,
generally speaking.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When it comes to peer pressure, personally, I don't find that's a good thing. If there's something I want to do that's not my friends doing, it's because I'm not here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say, like, you know, someone offers me, like, some type of something that's bad or something, right? And I'm just like, we're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't do it, I'm not going to do it. If I
yeah.
used to do it, it's because it's my own conscious decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's forcing me to, like, you know, I used to just call it drugs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, that was my conscious decision to go out there and go pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm certainly glad you got off of that.
That's what I say, for me, peer pressure, I don't find that's the right thing. For some people, it can be, but in general, I just think it's just willpower.
Okay. Carl?
Yeah, sometimes it's, and I agree on the general issue of willpower, but these days, you can be exposed to even all types of ideas and types of behaviors and suggestions to do that otherwise you would never have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it tends to always push the limits that way.
Mm-hmm. And
because people are always looking to push the limits,
mm-hmm,
go to extremes.
And, you know, everyone who makes a decision makes that decision consciously. But the reality of again, mediums and social media is they often give a sense that everybody is doing something but you. That sort of mentality is something that's very verified among, you know, experts that people see, and they give this sense of they're missing out on what everybody else is doing. And as Stuart pointed out, what people often do in those arenas is present an ideal that is going to be admired and impress others. And it again, can have place a pressure, especially on young people, but even on older people, as to what they're missing out on. Let's go to the next.
Yes. TJ had his hand up.
Oh, sorry. TJ?
I think that it's the value of time as well.
Okay.
Because so often in the past, we would have only been in certain situations for a period of time where it's a controlled situation and those kind of things wouldn't come up.
Mm-hmm.
Now you open yourself up all of the time to those people that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
Not used to be just a short amount of time.
Yeah. I'm sorry, it's always there, right? And again, if you've got this dependency to check it, that can magnify that problem. Number four, does technology sometimes have a negative effect on our productivity?
Absolutely.
One survey suggests that the average employee spends 8 hours a week doing non-work related tasks during work hours. Have you ever, this might be more true for us guys, but have you ever been involved, I don't know if do they still call it a LAN party?
Yes.
Okay, to where you've got a whole bunch of computers linked together, and you can get together and you can all compete in some game. When you do one of those things, you might play for hours and hours and hours. And by the end of it, there's this sense of great accomplishment that you have emotionally. But the reality is, what have you actually accomplished? Well, I'm pretty sure I conquered the world 2 or 3 times, But again, those sort of games can present that sort of emotion, and you can feel exhausted and the feelings of accomplishment when you haven't really technically done anything. But again, technology can sometimes provide for a very large drain on our time. Let's go to the next question. How can social media increase self-centeredness? Any thoughts on that question? Stuart?
If they keep up your image online, at least that's what society would tell us. I was growing up and going through high school and junior high. Mm-hmm. So you have to present yourself in the most positive light. So that's bragging about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's self-centered.
Yeah. And everything that you put on there is sort of your personal view, your personal wall, your personal point of view. And so you take your selfie and you post your favorite YouTube video and all those things, you have the emphasis of these media that you so often see. We're almost towards the end of time. Question number 7, and again, I'm assuming that you can admit the negative effects that technology has sometimes had on you. How might it affect your children? And notice the article on the next page. Did you have a chance to read that?
Mm-hmm.
It's an article about a reporter's job, a reporter's opportunity to interview Steve Jobs. And if you haven't had a chance to read that, I would encourage that you do. And what you find, at least in Mr. Jobs' household, is that he had very strict limitations on the amount of time his children could spend on screens. And the reason he made that decision is he understands the effects that even the devices he has created can have on children. So we'll go ahead and stop there, and we'll move on a Sunday. Thank you for your comments. We will touch on number 8 Sunday morning. What practical measures might be taken to help.